Hey, it's Bubba Wallace from 2311 Racing. You know what feels like forever? Sitting on a plane waiting for takeoff. Good thing I've got Chumba Casino. With daily boosts and social casino games on tap, this is the kind of fun that makes time fly. Why not turbocharge your downtime? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
A superstar football player, a beloved son and brother, a violent end. What forces were at work from birth that could have derailed the promising career of an unstoppable professional athlete and turned him to a life of crime? This week's episode is Aaron Hernandez, Part 1.
In the night, your heart fills with dread. Probably a murderer who wants you dead. It could be a ghost, a demon, or worse. Perhaps you're the victim of a witch's curse. It's hopeless, you're doomed. You'd call a priest if you could. You'd rather just listen to who? Sinister Who?
This is going to be a doozy.
Three-parter, man. I've been down all kinds of rabbit holes on this one.
Yeah. It's, I knew of this. I didn't know the layers of it.
Correct.
And I didn't know just how many alleged murders were attributed to him.
It's shocking.
By some.
True.
Some say no. But I, it's one of these that I kind of only knew at a cursory glance of stuff until once you take a deep dive, there's a lot to this.
There's so much going on. I remember when it came out thinking, oh, that's weird. Why would he do that? He's a professional athlete. And now studying it, I think, wow, that's weird. Why would you do that? You're a professional athlete. You make a lot of money. What are you doing with your life? Every choice, you just look at him and go, you had such a huge promising future and you just made choice after choice after choice that would put everything at risk constantly. And finally, all those risks caught up with him.
I also think the fact that he was an athlete contributed to these choices.
Oh, yes.
Due to massive head trauma.
I think so.
Which we will talk about in the third episode.
Oh, yes. We got so many parts.
This first episode, we're going to talk about Aaron Hernandez's childhood and kind of everything leading up to when he leaves for the University of Florida.
And also other stuff that happened that people think contributed to his actions and reactions and behavior.
Yeah. So I'm Christy.
I'm Heather.
And this is going to be kind of a long one. So I say we just jump right in.
I'm into it. Let's do it.
Okay. Aaron Hernandez grew up in a modest home in Bristol, Connecticut, a working class city about 18 miles west of Hartford. He was the youngest of two boys, with his brother, Dennis Jonathan, a.k.a. DJ as a child, but now goes by Jonathan, 3 years his senior. Their parents, Dennis and Terry, had been high school sweethearts at Bristol Central High School, the same school Jonathan and Aaron would eventually attend. Terry was of Italian heritage, and according to Jonathan's book, The Truth About Aaron, was a constant presence of love and support throughout their childhood. You've read this book?
Yes. Twice.
One sentence review.
Okay, that's a good one. It is a clear glimpse into the somewhat everyday childhood of this family, but the extraordinary instances of violence that occurred both on the sporting field and at their home, with a sort of a detour into Jonathan's personal life and then wrapping up in how the crimes affected their family, which is a understandable perspective given the author, but maybe not fair to all the parties involved.
I like that. I like that review, especially the last part.
Yes. I mean, you get it that he's just like, here's the negative ways it affected me and my mom. And that's all he knows.
Does he think his brother did it?
He kind of says, I don't know, because the family does see this transformation. His mother uses the phrase, that's not my son anymore. He says, I look at him and think, what's happened to my brother? So I think from the family's perspective, they were like, maybe.
Yeah, it's hard, I imagine, to wrap your head around something like that. So I can understand them painting him as more of a sympathetic figure. And I watched as you did too, the Netflix documentary, which we've gotten a lot of messages asking us if we watched this, so I know a lot of you guys have. It's very well done. You can feel sorry for him while also recognizing he became a terrible person and did terrible things. I don't find those two things mutually exclusive.
No, I think we're not, like, not human anymore. If we, the world isn't mustache twirling villains and saints, right? So there's, it's, I'm telling you, the Menendez brothers ruined my life.
This is very,
it makes me
similar
think,
to the Menendez
it makes
brothers,
me think
I think.
Of that.
Yeah.
Yes, where you can say, this, I hate what this person did. I don't see why they did it. But they're not the devil. That's not the worst person ever. That maybe there were some chances they didn't get, or I feel a little bit less. The Menendez brothers is a whole nother. We have two parts on that. But in this case, the childhood is traumatic. It's bad. Mm-hmm. It's real bad. Not everybody that has a traumatic childhood grows up to do that. But then you start factoring other things, and pretty soon you put the pieces of the puzzle together, and it paints a person who is capable of great violence.
There's a primordial soup to creating murderers.
It seems
at
like
times.
It's a casserole.
Yes, a murderous casserole. Well, the patriarch of the family, Dennis, was known around Bristol as the King. A first-generation immigrant from Puerto Rico, Dennis was thought of as an American success story after achieving local fame as a high school football star, receiving a football scholarship to the University of Connecticut, and earning an honest living in the blue-collar town as a custodian at the local grade school.
And the wife was the secretary at the grade school. So just your average working family.
Yes, they were very... I was telling you before this, something that surprised me was I didn't realize just how kind of blue-collar the family was mm-hmm. until researching and watching the documentary.
And you see a picture of the house, and it's very
Yeah, it's modest. I mean, it's nice, it's fine, but the town they grew up in was definitely blue-collar, and they were, by all accounts, just an average American family. Dennis had many friends in Bristol and took great pleasure in hosting an annual cookout and a 3-on-3 basketball tournament for the neighborhood that sometimes drew over 500 spectators. By all accounts, he was a local hero. But behind the scenes, the King subjected his sons and wife to physical and emotional abuse, according to Jonathan's book. Terry told her sons that their father was kind, made her feel special, was an incredible dancer, and a football star. But she also recalled how he had a much darker side, which reared its ugly head when he was on drugs. Even on their wedding night, Terry walked in on Dennis snorting cocaine in the bathroom. When she confronted him, he yanked her wedding ring from her finger and smashed it with a hammer, not apologizing until the next morning.
Yeah, I think it was hard for them because as little kids, they thought he was the absolute coolest and best.
As you do with your father.
And then they started getting a little bit bigger and they witness horrible things, and then they become subjected to horrible things, and their mom starts telling them these kind of stories and letting them in on the King is not who everybody thinks he is.
They start to see a different side to their father. Dennis apparently also took to fatherhood slowly, unable to leave behind his wild ways. On the night Aaron was born, Dennis left 2-year-old Jonathan at home and went out partying with his friends, rather than heading to the hospital to comfort his wife and see their newborn baby.
That's a deal breaker, ladies.
That's not something I would look kindly upon.
I would not be okay with that.
Definitely not okay with that.
You've had a baby. I think the only
Who
way...
Who took this poor woman to the hospital when she was in labor?
I drove myself. I mean, yeah.
That's definitely a red flag. I think, but you know, I mean, in most abusive relationships, there's always red flags. And I think she probably looked the other way to help with her kids.
Yeah, and just remember the good times.
Yeah, and you know, you think you can change them, and it's definitely no fault of her own. Life in the Hernandez household was tumultuous, and arguing was always a constant. Eventually, it became too much, and Dennis and Terry divorced in 1991. However, they eventually found their way back to each other and remarried in 1996, when Aaron was 6 years old. In a recorded jailhouse phone call, Aaron recalled his childhood consisting of his mom routinely kicking his dad out of the house, only to take him back.
My mom went through a real lot with my father, said Aaron.
These jailhouse phone calls in the documentary are
It's the
wild and eye-opening.
It's kind of the thread that weaves it all together.
Yeah. It's, you know, from both sides, the people that he's talking to and him, it's the most vulnerable I think anyone gets in that documentary, and speaks a lot of truths.
There's some shocking things.
There are some shocking things.
He felt pretty loose thinking nobody was going to hear them.
That's the thing, too, is when, I mean, documentary or no documentary, all those phone calls are recorded mm-hmm. in prison. But I think I was thinking this in another documentary I was watching, Cheer, which I was, y'all aren't watching Cheer on Netflix, get on it.
Missing out.
It's fantastic.
Okay.
But I think a lot of times people in one-on-one interviews and documentaries forget that millions of people are going to see this.
Do you think that maybe we forget that too and we see this?
Well, millions of people, I don't think
not millions.
But I think you want to be like honest and truthful, and maybe you're venting, or you're happy to have someone listen to you, and you say things that almost like you would in therapy, and then you're like, oh, I forget the jail's recording this, and also Netflix is making a documentary about this, and now it's out there for everyone to hear
permanently,
kind of like the Jinx, which is probably the most all time. I forgot I was in a documentary. Oopsie, that's ever happened.
It's a big, pretty big oopsie, pretty big one.
Well, Dennis and Terry were also no strangers to brushes with the law. In 1993, after attempting to buy cocaine from an undercover cop, Dennis was arrested. When Aaron was 11, Terry was also arrested for running an illegal gambling ring out of their family home. In addition, finances were an issue, with the couple filing for bankruptcy in 1999, according to The Globe.
I don't want to blame anybody, but Jonathan did not mention that his mom ran an illegal gambling ring. The impression I got of Mrs. Hernandez was that she was very straight-laced, and she was pissed off all the time that Dennis liked to party, and he kind of painted his dad as a party animal.
He left that little tidbit out.
Because we do kind of our separate research and then put them all together, and sometimes I go, did not know that.
Yeah.
This is a thing I learned
today. Does he talk about his dad doing drugs?
Yeah, he talks about that and his mom telling about his dad doing drugs and remembering after his dad's gone on a bender, seeing him kind of sleeping or passed out all day when the kids would want to watch TV or eat cereal, you normal Saturday morning mm-hmm. stuff. And they had to be shushed a lot because she feared waking the beast pretty much.
Literally. Well, amidst all this chaos, the beatings continued. Aside from the usual ones with his belt in his hand, sometimes raising 9-year-old Jonathan in the air with one hand while beating him with the other, Dennis Hernandez sometimes lost complete control. In one incident, Jonathan recalls watching his father repeatedly smash his mother's head into a bathroom sink, while the boys, ages 6 and 9, looked on in horror. She reportedly told them,
"This coward thinks he's strong because he can beat a woman."
That is a memory that shapes your life.
That's
an incident that will shape a child's life.
It's very graphically written, and you can tell it's one of those things that he probably shuts his eyes and still sees it because they walked around. I think they heard screaming. They walk around the corner and they see him like grab her by the back of the hair and smash her face into the bathroom counter until she yells that at them, and then he keeps beating her and she goes unconscious.
Wow.
So 9 years old is old enough to remember that.
Oh,
and 6
years
old, too.
Definitely. And like we talk about with memories, the more times you think of a memory, the more imprinted it is on your brain.
Mm-hmm.
And I imagine that's one when you witness at such a young age that you've thought of a lot by the time you get to your adult years.
And it layers on top of itself.
Yeah. In another incident, Jonathan recalls mindlessly tapping a pencil while working on homework at the family's dining room table. Without warning, 2 sharp metal points stabbed the young boy in the forehead. His father had driven the metal end of a vacuum cleaner cord into Jonathan's head.
"I thought I was dying,"
Jonathan wrote, in reaction to the waterfall of blood that covered his young face.
Yeah, he was supposed to finish his homework so he and his brother and dad could go to the local basketball game. And as he was bleeding horribly, the dad's like, well, I guess you're not going to go to the game, and takes Aaron. And the mom, when the dad gets back home, Terry finally has to tell Dennis, listen, this has to stop. We're going to have to take him somewhere. We're going to have to explain how this happened. He's bleeding everywhere. He was just doing his homework. And she kind of makes this plea, like, this is the end of the line. Look what you, this is so serious. You really could have done something. And this has to be kind of the final straw. And Jonathan says it's sort of kind of
tampered off
from
after that.
There's still some instances, but she said that was kind of his mom's, from his mom's perspective.
Well, Jonathan told the Globe that he and his brother Aaron lived in constant fear of their father's wrath, that the beatings were regular, severe, and could happen over anything. In that same interview, Jonathan recalled a time he tried to report the abuse.
I picked up the phone once to seek help, and his response was, call him. And he handed the phone, and he said, I'm going to beat you even harder, you and your brother. They're going to have to pull me off of you when they knock down the door.
Man.
It's a classic threat to abuse kids, is, too, of, I'll kill you before they get here, or they'll never believe you.
Or you call their bluff, and you're like, I don't care, call them. Mm-hmm. And you show no fear, so then they think, well, you what good would it do if I even did this? It's just going to cause more damage.
They basically, they talk about they would just run away from him and try to hide, because they just were constantly scared.
I do the same.
Yeah.
While seemingly anything could send Dennis into a blind rage, especially if he was drinking or using drugs, the beatings were especially bad when he was disappointed in his son's efforts in school or sports. A former high school football star himself, Dennis wanted both Aaron and Jonathan to follow in his footsteps, and it seemed everyone in town knew this. In an interview with CNN, Bristol County Sheriff Thomas Hodgson recalled a memory of Aaron.
His father was pretty strict. I mean, he told me his father used to make him, you know, shoot 500 shots before he went sometimes to play with his friends.
Sheriff Hodgson went on to say,
his dad clearly kept them anchored.
He was known around town as being the king, but also a no bullshit, you don't fuck with this guy. He's the, in multiple interviews in the documentary, everyone that knew him said he was the man of that household, as much as I dislike that expression. Mm-hmm. But that's what they're like, he ran that household. Everyone knew, like, he doesn't take your shit.
The Hernandez boys will show up when they say they're going to show. Like, yeah. He's like,
he just didn't tolerate from them or anyone, really.
Yeah.
Like, any kind of shenanigans.
I don't know if I would say making someone shoot 500 shots on the basketball courts, like, anchoring them. That may be over-practicing the kids. This is some Tiger Woods dad or Michael Jackson dad.
Well, kinda. And it's also just like control.
Yeah.
What's up, fools? Main Event Jey Uso here from the WWE. When it's just me between matches, it's day one-ish. And that means it's Chumba time. With hundreds of casino-style games and new titles arriving weekly, there's always something fresh to try at Chumba Casino. The daily boosts make it even more fun. And have me about to get them all during my downtime. Ready for a fun way to chill out and enjoy a few minutes for yourself? Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Jeff Morgan, an assistant football coach for Bristol High School, where Aaron played, also seemed to be aware of Dennis's violent tendencies. In an interview with the Boston Globe, Morgan described an incident where Aaron had been caught drinking before a school dance. When Aaron was seen next at school, it seemed clear Dennis had had his way with him.
The next time we saw him, he looked like, I guess his father did discipline him some. He had a black eye. I'm assuming that's where that came from.
Imagine the shame in having to go to school, because everyone at school, it's not that big of a town. They know you didn't get it at school. They probably know you didn't get it on the weekend. They know you got it at home.
They know your dad is a hard ass.
Yeah. And then, man, that's just, and I don't know the protocol back then with teachers.
With reporting.
Yeah. And like, if you suspect something, like how you deal with that, that's what teachers have. Bless everyone that's a teacher.
Seriously.
Shout out to you if you're a teacher. You have one of the
or
most,
counselors. Yes.
Yes. Anything involving like working with kids.
Because it's mandatory reporting for certain positions and certain things that you see. And because then you're like, well, am I going to put this kid in more danger by reporting it? And sometimes, and
or am I going to put myself in danger?
For sure.
If he, I mean,
it's the hardest thing.
They're obviously an unhinged, violent person. If they get wind that you reported them, they know where you work.
Yeah.
They probably know where you live.
It doesn't seem like he's afraid of much.
No. As the boys became older, and at the insistence of Terry, The physical abuse began to tamper down, but by then the damage had been done. In addition to the beatings at home, Aaron also suffered some pretty severe childhood injuries to the head. During a skating incident, Aaron accidentally smashed into a wall, face and head first, knocking out his two front teeth. In another incident, the brothers were working with tools in the garage when the head of Jonathan's hammer swung loose and collided with Aaron's head, causing blood to come from his ears and nose.
Yeah, Jonathan said he got, when the hammer hit his head, Aaron pretty much slumped to the ground and was barely conscious and was sort of like, am I dying? Because you're seeing stars.
You would think
stars.
He would. I'm sure as and bleeding, Jonathan, he probably thought, I just accidentally killed my brother.
And he's bleeding out of his ears?
Yeah.
That's real bad.
That's not a good sign.
No. And then the two front teeth, so that he had fake teeth up front, and Jonathan tells stories about him taking him out and playing with him and stuff. Mm-hmm. But at the time, I think their aunt was watching them and was just horrified because they saw him go full speed and lean forward and take it in the head and the face and fall backwards and then jump up and was like, I'm fine. And they're like, your mouth is
blood is gushing from your mouth.
Yes. But he, you know, they had that kind of like, I'm tough. I'm back up. I got it.
Well, they were raised in a household where
you cannot be a baby.
No, weakness was not tolerated. Mm-mm. Any sign of weakness made you a quote pussy.
Yes.
And some other quotes that we'll get to in a minute.
Unsavory.
According to Jonathan, his father wasn't the only one in the home with a violent temper. In his book, he describes how his brother would show flashes of rage. Friendly video game sessions would turn darkly violent when out of nowhere, Aaron would slam the controller into his brother's wrist or claw at the skin on his face. Later, Aaron would apologize, explaining that he
blacked out
when these things happened.
Yeah, DJ said he would get a glazed look in his eye and Aaron would just turn and just beat the shit out of him.
I mean, that could definitely be a sign of some sort of head trauma or just other
abuse,
propensity to violence or something. But I never saw anything about him being taken to doctors, counselors, either of them.
They did not mention this in DJ's book.
By the abuse they were witnessing / experiencing, these blackout rage sessions. I mean, those are all red flags to get these kids to
therapist,
get some help.
Yes.
And sadly, those things did not happen. A neurologist would have helped immensely, I imagine. Tragically, Aaron wasn't only assaulted by the hands of his father. On one snow day, described in Jonathan's book, the classes in their elementary school were canceled. During a game of hide and seek with some older boys in the neighborhood, the brothers were separated. While Jonathan chose one hiding spot, Aaron was forced into a tent with an older boy. Jonathan implies that it was in this tent that Aaron was sexually molested.
Aaron's college girlfriend, Alyssa, also said that he corroborated the story, that it was in a tent when he was about this age, and the details were similar. So it sounds like it's very sad and unfortunately a pretty common occurrence.
Yeah.
And DJ said that Jonathan said he tried to talk to him about it, and Aaron just said, just tell me something to make me laugh. I don't want to talk about it. Just say something that would make me smile.
Well, George Leontire, one of Aaron's later attorneys, told the Globe that Aaron also confided in him that he had been sexually abused as a young boy. Leontire also recalled that Aaron thought the abuse had made him gay. And Leontire is also gay.
Okay.
I don't want to say also because I don't know if Aaron was or was not gay. Leontire, as a gay man, said that Aaron asked him, do you think you're born gay? And he said, yeah, I do think that. And then Aaron thought that the sexual abuse he had endured had maybe made him go down a path like that. So, yeah, he was struggling with a lot.
That sounds like it, especially in
multiple
this era.
Forms of abuse, and yeah, especially in this era. In addition to being an abusive father, Dennis Hernandez was also homophobic and made no attempt to hide it. Jonathan recounted to the Boston Globe,
"I remember Aaron wanted to be a cheerleader. My cousins were cheerleaders and amazing. And I remember coming home and, like, my dad put an end to that real quick, and it was not okay. My dad made it clear that he had his definition of a man." Well, I think you watch cheer and you can say that those cheerleaders are men.
There are men and women on this team, and they are fucking beasts.
It's gymnastics.
It's way more than, yeah. It's like, it should be, in my opinion, an Olympic sport. Like, they the brutality they put their bodies through and just the fearlessness you have mm-hmm. to have to be thrown up 10 feet in the air.
So high.
You're not wearing a helmet
nope.
you're, or pads or any. You're wearing a tiny little outfit.
No.
If you didn't have a big ass bow on your head.
You have to have a little hole for your ponytail on top yeah. to come out of the helmet.
And you're counting on people to catch you so you don't slam into the ground and
hopefully
who knows what. Do and they suffer concussions, broken bones, everything all the time. It's a dangerous sport.
Do they get dropped?
Yeah.
Oh, that's horrifying.
Free episode.
Oh, God.
A lot.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
So apparently that was not a sport enough for Mr. Hernandez.
Yeah. I don't think he knew the
extent,
the intricacies of competitive cheerleading.
I think he was going by sidelines.
Yeah, which is what a lot of people do. And yes. that's they talk a lot about that in cheer, too, is what you see on the sidelines at a game is not at all what's going on behind the scenes. They're all training. Every collegiate cheerleading team is training for the NCAA tournament in Daytona every year.
Oh, okay.
And that's all they train for is the 2 minute, 15 seconds they get at Daytona, and everything they do all year goes into that. So what you see them doing on the sidelines is just like
fun.
They're there to support the team, but behind that they're practicing
hours,
7 days a week, multiple hours a day. It's wild. Yeah. So the next little thing we're going to talk about has a word that neither one of us approve of and we don't use. And we decided we don't want to say it. We don't feel comfortable saying it. And we would not want to say it to and elicit any kind of negative reaction in any of the listeners.
And that's the we split the duties here where Chrissy reads the outline and I have to say the quotes. And sometimes we quote real bad people.
Yeah.
And this is one of them.
So
it's a slur for homosexual yes. people that starts with an F.
Yeah. And so Heather's going to say F word instead. Yes. But it's not.
I'm not saying fuck.
It's not fuck. It's the other F word.
Yes.
Well, Jonathan also describes the time in his book when the family watched a community basketball game together. Aaron had clasped his hands in front of him and had his elbows at his side. This enraged Dennis, who admonished Aaron for standing like a
F-word
and warned him that
there are no F-words in the Hernandez family.
That is a word. I'm reading it.
Yeah.
And even reading it, it's so harsh and just everything I hate.
I listen to all the audiobooks that I read. I get the Kindle so I can read them, and then I'll walk the dogs and listen to them too. And I was walking the dogs when this came up, and it's just,
It's shocking.
I'm not an LGBTQ person, but it still makes.
Well, you're an ally.
But I'm an ally. That's true. But I, you can never, you know, you can't really. I can be offended by the N word, but as I'm not a part of I'm not a person of color, I'm not a part of that group that. I won't say, oh, it makes me just as upset as someone that would be a part of the group, but it does make me upset.
Sure.
And the same with this word. And as I was walking in, even though Jonathan is totally quoting his dad, and at no point is Jonathan even says, I hate when people use this. I have people that in my life that are LGBTQ, and this really upsets me. But just even walking the dogs, I wasn't ready for it.
Yeah.
You know, your eyes can kind of preview when you're reading, but listening, it just pops in your head. And I was like, oh. And then he said it again, and then he said it again, and I was like, Jesus, that was the free way in which his dad just sort of threw this word
rolled
around.
Off the tongue.
And it rolled, apparently in their house, it was used frequently, and any sort of behavior, if they cried, or if he, like in this case, he was literally just standing, his hands were in front of him. It wasn't like he was doing any movement or gesture. He was literally just standing with his hands clasped, and his dad came up and pushed him and said, don't be like that.
Mm.
And it was just such a weird chip on his shoulder that his dad had, but that they used it a lot and it was very unsettling. So I know how ear assaulted I felt, and I know we're in people's ears, and I don't want to ear assault other people.
No, it's an ear assaulting word for sure. It's and to hear that in your house growing up repeatedly, I imagine if you were having any feelings that you might be gay, you're going to push those down real far and feel like you are a terrible and a person, and you're wrong, and this lifestyle that you want to live isn't right.
And
that goes
for
anybody, not just Aaron Hernandez, but yeah.
Like who I am is wrong and I hate myself. And yeah, it's damaging to a kid.
It's heartbreaking when I hear of people, my friends that are out that grew up in houses where that's how they felt. And, you know, it's, I mean, that kind of unacceptance and stuff is what leads to like teenage suicides and
high rates,
self-harm and everything. And it's, this is again where I feel sorry for him.
Yes.
I feel sympathy for him because he was just a kid at this point trying to just fucking watch a basketball game.
He was literally
game.
Just standing there.
Yeah. And he's assaulted. He can't even do that right. This horribly offensive word was part of Dennis's everyday vernacular, according to Jonathan.
F-word was used all the time in our house. All the time. Standing, talking, acting, looking. It was the furthest thing my father wanted you to even look like in our household. This was not acceptable to him.
Jonathan told the Globe.
Pervasive.
Yeah, yeah. And one has to wonder why. Did he feel that way?
And you don't know if, you know, maybe where he came from, yeah. there was such a persecution of homosexual people that he thought, well, I don't want that fate to befall my sons, or if he, you know.
Or how he was brought up.
How he, yeah, they had it in their household, or if it was religious reasons or what it was. But it was, seemed like
that
was, it was one of his hot buttons, that if the boys acted anything that wasn't stereotypically masculine, he'd flip out.
Yeah, which is, I'm sure, a reason he wanted them to be star football players and get them into a masculine sport and have them be seen around town under that lens.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
One benefit to the boys' close age was that the two were able to play on their high school varsity football team together. Jonathan, a senior, was quarterback, and Aaron, a 13-year-old wide receiver, was talented enough to be chosen for the varsity team as a freshman. Aaron also ran track and was an impressive basketball player. Once Jonathan graduated high school, he began playing football for the University of Connecticut, following in his father's footsteps. He looked forward to eventually bringing his brother onto the team. But before Aaron's high school graduation, tragedy struck. On New Year's Eve 2005, the Hernandez family sat down to dinner. Suddenly, Dennis became struck with a pain in his gut that had him laid out in agony on the couple's bed. Terry rushed her husband to the hospital, where he was treated for a strangulated hernia, a condition where a hernia is cutting off the blood supply to the intestines and abdominal tissue. The doctors let him know he desperately needed surgery.
Yeah, they said that the family, it just came out of nowhere, that he just all of a sudden, it just woo, all of a sudden you feel it. And the Jonathan said that he and Aaron just sat at the table eating, because he said, I'm fine, it's no big deal, you know, I just got to go to the hospital, it's nothing, I'll see you guys tomorrow. Of course, you know, all parents say that.
Sure.
And they said they just sat there and thought, okay, well, Dad, he'll probably be home tomorrow.
Well, during the surgery, complications arose, and eventually, Dennis had to be moved to ICU as he suffered from blood toxicity. His condition deteriorated, and finally, on January 6, 2006, Dennis Hernandez died as doctors frantically struggled to save his life while his wife and two sons stood by watching, helpless.
Yeah, the surgery was supposed to take like 2 hours, and it took eight or something, and then from there, they got to go and visit him a couple times in the ICU, and then his condition just got worse to where the whole extended family, everybody was in the waiting room, and the mom and sons were like, okay, well, finally we'll go home and get some sleep. And then the family calls and is like, you got to get back up here.
Yeah.
They'd moved him to a hospital that was a little bit closer to the house, but the time it took them to get back to the hospital, he was like coding out, and they stood in, which, why would they let the family stay in the room? I mean, I guess it's your choice or whatever, but they said that Jonathan said that he saw them like put the paddles to the dad, that it was bad. Like it was like that. So, I mean, maybe they.
Yeah. I mean, if he got struck with this on New Year's Eve on the 6th, so it was less than a week that this quickly took him down. Well, many have posited that the death of Dennis was what plummeted Aaron towards a downward spiral. From an outsider's perspective, the father and son had been extremely close, with Aaron idolizing his father and aspiring to emulate him. Perhaps this perceived closeness is why so many thought it odd that Aaron appeared emotionless and stoic at his father's funeral, not shedding one tear for the fallen king.
However, knowing now the details of the abuse Aaron endured from his father, the lack of tears may not be that surprising.
Yeah, and they say that at the time they were kind of trying to find not really a replacement, but Aaron was about to play his a big deal basketball game where he was going to score his 1,000th point. And in their town, it was a big deal when they knew basically you could kind of calculate what game it would be at. And when you scored the point, you take your basketball and you go to the stands and give it to whoever, you know, it's like a thank you pretty much. And DJ or Jonathan had given it to their dad. And Aaron, this happened right like weeks after. And his dad, of course, wasn't there. And so they called the uncle. So Dennis's brother came and he was able, they were twins, and he was able to give him his, you know, give him the ball. But it was still that moment where everybody, because everyone in the community knew Dennis Hernandez, everybody in the community knew, they said that the funeral for him wrapped around the block. Yeah. People lined up trying to get in. And so everybody was at that game because they knew this was Aaron's big deal. And of course, there's everybody's crying and it was a huge deal. But still that feeling of he should be here and why, you know, why isn't he here?
Also, everyone grieves differently.
True.
So just because you're he not crying at a funeral, I've been to funerals where I was very sad, but you know, sometimes you internalize things and shut it down. I'm sure you're also grappling with a myriad of emotions because this was your father. You did idolize him and looked up to him, and his word was everything in that house. He also beat the shit out of you.
Yes, and he also told you, know, maybe if you wanted to be a thing that you thought you weren't allowed to be around him, and now you're like, am I free? Am I feel guilty for feeling happy because he hit me, but I also loved him. But also, you also get kind of codependent on someone who says, this is how you dress, this is how you stand, this is how you act, this is the sport you play. And when they're gone, you think, well, shit, now what do I do?
You have to start making those decisions on your own. Well, in the wake of his father's death, Aaron began spending more time with his cousin, Tanya Singleton, 14 years his senior, and her husband, Jeffrey Cummings. Tanya's mom and Aaron's dad were siblings. In his book, Jonathan details how his mother hated visiting Tanya's house, as it was a structureless, wild place where folks played table games and drank and smoked into the wee hours of the night. Jonathan and Aaron would accompany his parents on visits as children, but Terry would get fed up and leave with her boys. Dennis would stay, stumble home, then sleep away the next day. But after Dennis's death, Tanya and Jeff's home became an oasis for Aaron, who struggled with his big brother, Jonathan, off at college.
Yeah, that's the other thing is now the house is so empty. Jonathan's gone, Dennis is gone, and now then Aaron starts saying, I don't want to go home because it's not like I thought it, it's not how it used to be.
Yeah, not to mention he's, by all accounts, struggling with a lot of sexual identity. And I mean, he is no longer here to speak to that, but tons of people that knew him and had relationships with him said, yeah, he was very much struggling with being gay and not being able to come out. So that in and of itself is enough to shut any teenager down. But then when you've just lost your father and your brother's away and all, I mean, it's a recipe to implode.
Yeah, your foundation totally rocked.
Jeff even accompanied Aaron and one of Aaron's coaches on his trip to visit Florida as he was considering becoming a University of Florida Gator. Soon, Jeff was attending all of Aaron's football and basketball games, often taking smoke breaks with Terry, who was also there. Soon, Jeff and Terry were talking regularly and even going out for drinks together.
This is, happens when there's a woman in need. It happened in 9/11 when a lot of the firemen who did not make it, their widows would need help, and the surviving firemen would go over to help them and then fall in love with the 9/11 widows. They did a story about it. I think it was like the New York Times or something. But it's this weird emotional connection that you make when someone's grieving and you want to help them, even when you are married to another person.
There was a Ben Affleck and somebody movie about that too, where both of their spouses were on a plane that crashed and the spouses died, but through the deaths they realized the spouses had been
cheating
with each other.
Is Jennifer Garner in that? I don't remember.
Is that how they met?
Well, maybe.
I wanted to say it was Gwyneth Paltrow.
Is it called Bounce?
Maybe.
Okay.
They were in a movie, but I don't know if that's the movie I'm talking about. But they found solace in each other because, well, one, their spouses were dead, but also their spouses have been cheating on them with each other. But yeah, I mean, I could see, you see that in a lot of movies and stuff, especially like in 9/11 firefighters, but also like cops and stuff. So, yeah.
Because you got to take care of her.
Yeah. One night in the parking lot of Aaron's basketball game, his cousin Tanya confronted her husband and aunt, accusing them of having an affair. The two maintained it was an innocent friendship, but after that, nothing would be the same between Aaron and his mom. He was already having issues with her and pulling away and very resentful, and this was just adding fuel to the fire.
Yeah, button heads, kind of be like, you know, you're ruining our family or whatever.
Aaron's relationship with Jeff was also destroyed when Tanya kicked her husband out of her house, leading him to move into the Hernandez family home. Aaron was disgusted and began spending most of his time at Tanya's, where there were no rules or restrictions, and he could drink as much booze and smoke as much weed as he wanted. It was at his cousin's house that he would also meet Ernest Wallace and Carlos Ortiz, two unsavory characters that would play a major role in Aaron's life a few years down the road.
Yeah, it was the free-for-all that it was when he was a kid, too.
Like, yeah, she, from everything I've read, anyone was welcome, mm-hmm. which can be good, but it's also leaving the door open for a lot of unsavory characters that are just passing through town. There was a lot that went on there. He was 16 at this time, 17. Mm-hmm. Just when you have no rules and you can just do whatever you want,
it's not good
for
a developing boy.
No. And also in the documentary, Dennis Sansushi's dad, who Dennis Sansushi was the high school quarterback, said when all this was going on and Jeff moved into the home, like, Aaron would walk downstairs and Jeff would be in his boxers in the family kitchen just making breakfast and, like, his dad died 6 months earlier.
Yeah.
Like, and that's also not something that you're going to be okay with seeing.
Sitting in dad's seat.
Yeah.
Sitting at the table where dad would sit. Yeah.
You're very resentful that you feel like your mom shouldn't have moved on this quickly. And not to mention, it's your cousin's
husband.
So there's a lot to unpack.
It's twisted.
There. Yeah. Tanya and Aaron became inseparable and soon formed a bond that was closer to that of a mother and son. On one occasion, Terry even received a call from a local bartender, reporting her 16-year-old son had been in with his cousin, and Tanya had been giving him alcohol. Terry flipped. She called Tanya to tell her,
"This stops now."
But according to Jonathan, Tanya replied with a terse,
"I am his mother now."
Yikes.
Yeah, there was... this is when it took a turn.
Also, this... this woman looks like a woman you don't want to fuck
she
with.
She looks like she would slap the shit out of you.
Yeah, yeah. She is not someone I'd want to stumble upon in a dark alley.
And for Aaron, she was like ride or die, man. She was like, I'm not going to flip on you.
No.
I'll never turn my back on you.
When we get into the trial stuff, like, she could have been in the mafia with his loyalty. She was like snitches get stitches type of mentality. But
she was.
She was everything to him.
Yep.
A big sister, a mom, whatever kind of role that was.
That he needed fulfilled.
Yeah, she was fulfilling it. And he probably was fine with her saying, "I'm your mother now."
Mm-hmm.
Aaron was angry and resented his mother and told Jonathan he was disappointed that she had destroyed their family. Jonathan encouraged Aaron to be calm and listen to her side of things. But Aaron's mind was made up. Later, at one of Aaron's big games, he snubbed his mom, telling her,
"I don't talk to sluts or whores."
That is a punch to the gut when your kid says something like that to you.
This is one in a series of, for up until he's playing in the Super Bowl, of him like inviting his mom to stuff, and sometimes not, but sometimes inviting her and just being kind of an asshole to her when she gets there. It's strange. It's like a constant, he constantly wanted to punish her, and he would almost trick her by being like, "Yeah, sure, you can come." And then when she got there, he just like would, what do you call it? what does Dwight Schrute do with the reshun.
Yeah.
He would just shun her, and she's in the room, but he would act like she wasn't in the room, and then she would just start crying and have to leave because
that's worse than not being invited.
Exactly, because she was basically, because then he's sitting there laughing and talking and joking with everybody else.
That's like when you're in high school and you really like a guy, or your boyfriend, like, y'all just broke up, and then he's like, "Hey, why don't you come to this party on
it's
Friday?"
A trap.
And you show up and he's macking on some other girl, and you're like, why the fuck did you tell me to come here?
Mean, because he's mean.
Yeah, and that's what it is. It's all about like showing out and control mm-hmm. and making someone hurt.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Up until now, Terry and Jeff had maintained that their relationship was strictly platonic. However, that story would soon change when Terry sat Aaron down to tell him that, in fact, she and Jeff had decided to start dating. After that, Aaron's relationship with his mother grew even more distant, with him even refusing to invite her to his high school graduation party.
But after the party, he had gotten a lot of checks, and he called his mom and said, "Hey, can you help me go to the bank and deposit these checks that I just got at my party?" And she basically said, "Fuck you, no." She said, "You didn't even invite me to the party, and now you want me to help you?"
Yeah.
And so it was this weird, like I said, this kind of weird dynamic of, "Hey, but you still want to help me?" And then there are times on those calls that you hear in the jailhouse where he says, "Man, you fucked my life up." And then other calls where he's like, "I love you. I miss you."
Yeah.
It's this back and forth, strained kind of relationship.
Similar to the one Terry had with Dennis.
True, true.
And Dennis had with his sons.
Yep.
Just that abusive cycle of, "I hate you, I love you, I hate mm-hmm. you, I love you." So when he grows up with that, it stands to reason.
And raging.
He sees that's how he's going to treat others. I also think there could have been some mental health stuff at play where he's just like straight up disconnecting
yeah.
from things. Listening to those jailhouse recordings, he always sounds very like almost stoned. Yeah. And I know he's not because he's in jail, but it's just this almost like he doesn't even understand the severity of things.
Yeah.
And you probably didn't just, that didn't start in prison. That was something that he's always kind of, I don't know, closed off, or maybe he learned to like stuff down his feelings a lot.
I think it's that, it's stuff down and avoidance. And there's, I can't remember what the other time is, but it's another situation where something bad happens and he tells Jonathan, "Do something to make me laugh.
Mm-hmm.
Do something to make me smile." And it's, he just wants to not think about it and just push it away. And so in this case, his dad's dead. He doesn't want to be in the house and have to deal with the fact that his dad's dead. So he just moves in with someone else. He doesn't want to deal with his feelings. So he just starts abusing drugs and alcohol.
The thing is, when you don't deal with your feelings and you just bottle them up and stuff them down,
it's like a,
eventually it's just going to, that cork on that bottle is going to come shooting out. And
like
it's
a third grade volcano experiment.
Yes. It's. Did you ever do one of those?
I always wanted to, and I never
didn't
did.
Do one either, I don't think.
It's one of those things that you see on sitcoms, and yeah. you're like, "When I'm in the third grade, I'm going to get to do that," and you don't.
I did an improv scene about them. I guess I was living my childhood dreams out vicariously.
That's what improv is. You get to fulfill your dreams.
That is
fantasies.
Very true. I don't think I did. I'll have to ask my mom, but it doesn't come to mind.
I built a scale model of the Titanic because I was very obsessed with the Titanic. But and they said you could do a mystery. And I was like, "A mystery? What sunk the Titanic?"
That is a mystery.
Like, kind of know.
I did a book report on the Titanic.
Did you hear that they hit the Titanic with a submarine?
What do you mean?
Like they were down.
Like the
whatever.
Wreckage?
Noah. Yeah. Someone was down in a submarine and they got too close and they rammed in.
Was it James Cameron?
Yeah. It was James Cameron. I think it was the government. And they rammed it and they didn't tell anybody for a couple months. I guess who's going to find out?
Yeah.
Someone goes down there and goes, "This shipwreck's all fucked up."
I mean, this might sound like a dumb question, but does it matter?
And that's the question, I guess, because there are they could go down and they've been trying to get stuff out of it. And
still?
Well, I think so. You can only get so much stuff.
Is
and
there
take
still
footage.
Shit in there?
I think there's still stuff down there.
Man, that's wild.
Isn't it weird that the ocean's so deep and shit's just down there?
Yeah, I think about that a lot. I think about the ocean a lot.
Sometimes I contemplate the vastness of the ocean.
All the time, and space.
What?
I'm not joking.
I love you.
It's, well, to me, space and the ocean are the same thing.
Yep.
Just
inverted.
One's down and one's up.
That's
yeah.
exactly right.
But it's yeah, it's crazy that, like, we will never know the depths of it, mm-mm. of either of those
the
things.
The Mariana Trench. What's nope. in there?
Yeah.
Lake Day William. That's it.
There's a, it's, there are things that live in the ocean that
we'll never know.
We have never seen light. Those like little things that live way down at the bottom that are like see-through and iridescent, those little fishies.
And if that's possible, what's in space?
Yeah.
There it is.
All sorts of shit, Heather.
Damn.
I'm going to posit somewhere there's a wormhole that connects space and the ocean.
I've always wondered that.
Because, I mean, it makes sense. Because that's like, it's like their vacation home. It's the same, but different.
For Loch Ness Monster, she goes yes. to space sometimes.
But also, like, how we want to, like, travel somewhere different, but yeah. that we still know yeah. on our planet for vacation. So they have, go like, to the space second homes.
Wormhole.
And, yes.
We just say we're not high. We're on drugs. We're like drunk or anything.
I'm drinking a Solil.
Stone cold. I got nothing.
Stone cold sober. You're doing nothing over there. Well, while Aaron was clearly struggling with his father's death, his mother's new relationship, and his brother being away at college, he was doing seemingly well in high school. He was well liked amongst his peers, funny, good looking, and a phenomenal football star. It was also at Bristol Central High where he met Shiana Jenkins, a high school girlfriend that he would reconnect with years later to have a baby with and ask to be his wife.
Shiana Jenkins does the foreword for the Jose Baez book, Unnecessary Roughness.
Okay.
And in that, she talks about, I think they maybe like were in grade school together but didn't really meet, but then they became friends in high school and then started dating, and she was on the track team and he was a football mm-hmm. star, and she said that all the girls were kind of vying for his attention.
He's very good looking.
He's hot. I know. It's hard to reconcile that, but then that's how they kind of, their friendship sort of blossom into love.
Yeah. Yeah, and she's heavily featured on the Inside the Mind mm-hmm.
The Killer Inside.
Killer Inside the Mind of Aaron Hernandez, yes. Yeah, because things take a crazy turn in episode 2 when...
This poor gal.
When her sister gets involved as well. Well, Aaron also began to develop a close relationship with the quarterback at his high school, Dennis Sansushi. Aaron was the team's wide receiver, and together the duo became an unstoppable force, completing an impressive 9 touchdown passes in the first 4 games of the season. The two began spending a lot of time together off the field as well, usually smoking copious amounts of marijuana. In the Netflix documentary, Killer Inside, The Mind of Aaron Hernandez, and in an interview with the Boston Globe, Sansushi discussed how he and Aaron would smoke before and after school, prior to heading to practice, and even before big games.
We were baked,
Sansushi told the Globe. Sansushi also admitted that their relationship was not strictly platonic, and that throughout middle and high school, he and Aaron engaged in a romantic relationship.
Me and him were very much into trying to hide what we were doing. We did not want people to know,
Sansushi told the Globe.
He's heavily featured in this documentary, yes. and his father is as yeah. well. Talking about the, and what we were saying earlier, of somebody that lives in this house with someone who says, my son will never be like that. Yeah. My son will never do that. And how he had to come out to his dad.
Yeah.
And how his dad thankfully had a really positive
his
response.
His dad seems great on the interview. And yes, he didn't come out until many years later after Aaron mm-hmm. took his own life. Well, according to Sansushi, it was crucial that he and Aaron kept their relationship a secret. At the time, Bristol was a traditional community with few known gay members. In addition, Sansushi was headed to the army post-graduation. But according to Sansushi and other sources close to Aaron, what Aaron feared most was his father finding out.
Which makes sense.
Yeah, and you're a football player. You're going to go to a big, probably SEC football school where, again, that's not something that's talked about back then or you know, really looked favorably upon. The army, a whole other separate issue.
Yes.
So, yeah, these two guys who, if you were to look at them as a fellow classmate, I can't imagine you would ever think these two are in an intimate relationship.
Yeah, they're just best friends.
They're best friends. They're masculine football players.
Mm-hmm.
And
stereotypically, everyone would just assume. And plus, Aaron was dating Shiana.
Yeah. So, it's, again, sympathy for having to hide who you really are and live in fear that someone's going to find out and your whole life is going to be destroyed and your father's going to beat the shit out of you and disown you. Despite the mental anguish Aaron was allegedly suffering, he continued to be a beast on the football field. His coaches, teammates, and neighbors all recognized that Aaron's talent was special and would take him far. But his impressive skills came with a dangerous price. In an interview with the Globe, Bristol resident Lori Belmonte recalled a particularly scary game in 2006 in which Aaron played against Maloney High School.
I saw him get hit and I saw him go down and he didn't get back up. And Aaron would always get back up.
And then the coaches went on the field, and he must have been totally out of it because they called the ambulance that was standing by. And so the EMTs immediately came up off the field, and they got him, and they took him away.
Despite suffering a massive concussion from that hit, Aaron only missed one game. He was quickly back on the field and finished out the season strong, even being named Connecticut's Player of the Year.
We will see this again and again.
Yes.
Where people in the stands think, that guy is done. And then he's like, put me back in.
We'll see again and again how the coaches are also like, put him back in.
Yeah.
Give him a shot.
He'll be fine.
He'll play through the pain. He'll be fine. And that shit happens starting in high school. I mean, really, the dangerous head concussions and everything can start in peewee.
Mm-hmm.
But when they're giving kids shots of pain meds and stuff so they can play through the pain. And yeah, Aaron is saying, put me back in. I think the rules are you have to sit out a game if you suffer
hopefully
a concussion. Yeah, but his dad, no tolerance for weakness. At this point, he's also, I believe, has passed, but you still have that mentality.
Mm-hmm. It's ingrained in you. Be tough. Get up. You're brave. You can take it. Take the hit.
Well, after their father's death, Jonathan and Aaron were left to make many difficult life decisions. One of these was where Aaron, an incredibly promising football player, would head for college. Though his brother and the coach of the University of Connecticut wanted to see Aaron stay in their home state, Aaron was successfully recruited by the University of Florida and Urban Meyer, one of the nation's top coaches at the time.
Well, and this was strange because, not strange, but Aaron had said, yeah, I'm going to go to UConn. Where
he even signed an agreement with them.
And then had this, you know, this kind of recruiting thing and said, okay, I'm going to Florida. No, wait, I'm going to go back to UConn. Okay, no, I'm going to go to Florida. So he starts showing the signs of real impulsive, kind of rash decisions. Mm-hmm. They said, you can visit, but don't sign anything because you need to withdraw your one offer before you sign the other. And he calls from down there and goes, hey, I just signed everything. I already signed it. And they're like, what?
So Urban Meyer was, I don't know if he's still coaches, but he had a reputation for being very insistent, very persuasive. He wanted really young high school kids that, mm-hmm. you know, hadn't even graduated yet to come and play on the team. And he kind of, he was known as, if I want this guy to come play here, he's going to come play here. So I imagine when you've got somebody telling you all these great things, you're going to get to the NFL. Your career is going to be so promising. Come here. We're going to do all this for you. That's hard as a 17-year-old kid to turn down.
Especially because the University of Florida was a huge, big deal school. And this guy is a very respected coach.
Yeah.
And he's telling you, you're going to go to the NFL if you play with me. You're going to believe him.
Yeah, absolutely. Meyer was known for his win-at-all-costs attitude and got on a plane to Bristol to meet with both Aaron's mom and his high school principal, Dennis Siegman. Coach Myers wanted Principal Siegman to allow Aaron to graduate 6 months early so he could immediately start playing football for the Gators. Siegman granted the request, but in an interview with the Globe, expressed regret over this decision.
If I had to do it all over again, I would have fought tooth and nail not to let that kid graduate at mid-year, not to let him go to Florida at mid-year. Had we had a longer time with him, maybe we could have changed things.
With his mom and school's permission and the persuasive persistence from Urban Meyer, 17-year-old Aaron Hernandez packed up and moved to Gainesville to play football at the University of Florida. However, there were clear signs that he was not mentally or emotionally prepared for this massive life change.
No, I moved away when I was 18. I was an idiot.
Same.
I mean,
and I wasn't having all of this other stuff that I hadn't just lost a parent.
Correct.
I wasn't struggling with my sexual identity.
Correct.
Yeah.
Same. And I wasn't, I didn't have the pressure of now you have to play football real good or we'll take all this money away.
Yeah.
Hey, it's Cole Swindell, and when I spend 200 days a year rolling down the highway, the bus can start to feel smaller than a guitar case. Everyone wonders how I stay chill while the hours crawl by. Truth is, one good luck spent on Chumba, and suddenly the trip feels a whole lot shorter. Finding your space, even when there isn't much to spare. Need some chill? Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus TNCs apply. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Apart from still grieving the death of his father, his propensity for partying, and his struggles with his sexual identity, Aaron was not academically prepared either. Records obtained by the Globe showed that Aaron's verbal SAT score was 420, almost 200 points below the minimum required in Florida. In his admission paperwork, a college administrator also wrote that he needed
reading and writing remediation. So, I mean, he's not, I mean, he's 17 too. He's 6 months early.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
He was not ready.
No.
They set him up with a tutor, but.
Yeah. And he went to, as a lot of recruits did with Urban Meyer, went to a community college when he got to Gainesville that didn't even transfer the college credits, but just to kind of get them up to speed because they hadn't finished graduating high school.
Mm-mm.
They're babies.
Yeah.
I mean, you're a baby even when you do graduate high school.
Seriously. And he's 17.
Yeah.
So he's, yeah.
Aaron was entering a world in which football reigned supreme, where exceptions to the rules were made and concerns about one's well-being were often overlooked in hopes of walking away with a win every Saturday. Quickly, Aaron began to learn that star football players were treated differently and not held to the same standards as others. With this untouchable attitude, it wasn't long before life in Gainesville would start spiraling out of control for Aaron Hernandez.
Dun, dun, dun!
Yeah. So what do we think?
This poor young man.
Yeah.
No shot. I mean, with the family, like the family dynamic of the violence and abuse, and then you mix in the sexual identity, and you mix in the dad's homophobia, and you mix in the sudden death of the dad, and you mix in the pressure from the sports. I mean, it's just, this is a casserole.
It was a... just a boiling pot.
It's starting, it's not even done yet because then he starts abusing drugs. And I'm not, here's the thing, you guys. I'm not a prude. If you want to smoke marijuana, you should do that.
Well, he was already abusing drugs.
That's what I'm saying.
Smoking a ton of weed before he went to college.
They said that you should not smoke weed when your brain's still developing because you could get.
I turned out okay.
Well, I mean, you're fine. Yeah, it's fine. You're fine. But but maybe, did you smoke all day, every day before every single practice?
What practice was I going
that's
to?
That's true.
No, of course not.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's he in a house where there were no rules, where you could literally wake up and smoke all day long.
Yeah.
And you maybe don't even have to go to school if you don't want to, and then come home and keep smoking with your cool cousin who lets you do whatevs and takes you to a bar. Like, he just had no chance. And that creates your little brain's getting whacked around on the football field, and it's getting all these chemicals into it, and it's so, you're so young.
The only part of that I don't 100% agree with is he had no chance.
Yeah.
Because someone else could experience all of that and not go on to murder a bunch of people.
That's true.
And people do experience a lot of that and not go on to murder a bunch of people.
My dad and my aunt would tell me about, my dad's dad beat the ever-loving shit out of my dad. And my dad would on purpose kind of like make him mad so that he wouldn't hit my aunts. He had four little sisters. And my dad didn't hit us. You know, one time he was like, okay, you can't walk in the street, so I have to give you spanking. But it wasn't like the same. His dad would come home wasted from the bar and beat the shit out of him. And so it's, you know, I do always go against that where everyone's like, well, you know, if your parents hit you, you're going to hit your kids.
There is a very strong correlation.
But not necessarily.
And even to spanking.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I mean, he definitely, the odds were stacked against him, and he needed for years someone to step in that was outside of the family with, that could offer counseling or therapy or just kind of put him back on a straight and narrow path. Some would say that's a lot of football coaches do that, but I didn't see a ton of like information that from his high school football coach. So I'm not really sure what their relationship was.
No, and he was supportive, and he did go to Florida with him and to help kind of evaluate knowing that his dad was not around. But it wasn't, you know, sometimes you hear about that where they're like, man, when my dad died, the coach was the only one that was still there for me. And it was like, he was supportive and he was a good coach, but it's not this patriarchal figure, because I think Aaron was drawn to Tanya as his person.
She was kind of everything to him.
Yeah.
Again, shout out to Cheer. Their coach is very much.
Oh, does she? She's like the mama bear?
Very much, yes. Yeah, so that's part one. In part two, we're going to get into all the stuff that started happening in Florida and then
NFL.
Subsequently, when he got drafted to the NFL and what happened while he was in the NFL.
Which is not what most, anybody actually. I don't think it's what happened to anybody else in the NFL, being indicted and convicted of
no
murder.
No one has murdered someone and then played an entire season in the NFL.
No.
That's the first.
It's a new one.
So yeah, a lot to come still. If you haven't watched the Netflix documentary, check it out. It's 3 episodes.
It's pretty digestible.
Yeah, it was way more emotional for me than I thought it would be.
I did cry several times, but it wasn't. Times. You know, sometimes you're like, this doesn't need to be 5 episodes. So it's 3 episodes. It's not too bad. They're each.
I thought it could
hour.
Even been maybe one more.
Could add some,
but there's a ton of courtroom footage, and seeing the families of those victims
made me cry.
That is very hard to watch.
Ursula Ward kills me.
Saint.
She is just
what her, a saint.
When she cries, I cry every single episode. Yeah.
She needs to be knighted and sainted.
And fought hard beyond the end. Yeah. She's changing laws, changing the world.
She's great. So yeah, it's seeing that real world stuff and mm-hmm. how it affected, but yeah, it's good. So check it out. And then before you hear season 2, you'll even know more what we're talking
exactly.
about.
All right. We got a live show coming up with The Cult.
We do.
On February 8th at 9 p.m. But then, Christy, what is happening the last week of March?
The last week of March is the last 2 days of the Dallas Comedy Festival, and on one of those days, we will have a live Sinisterhood show.
There's going to be a live show in the end of March, and we don't know the date
We don't know the date yet, but much like you do for a wedding, save the date.
Save the date.
Because if somebody... Nuptials will be had.
So we'll get nupped.
Someone will get nupped. So yeah, save the date. It'll be the last weekend in March. As soon as we know the date and time, you guys will be the first to know.
Yes.
And
follow us on Instagram and Facebook and Twitter, because we're going to put it on there too.
Yeah, yeah. And Patreons will get early access to those tickets as well. Well, Sinisterhood will always remain free, but if you wish to donate to our Patreon to help offset the cost of making and hosting the show, you can visit Sinisterhood.com and click on Patreon in the top right corner. You'll get some sweet perks like Patreon-exclusive content, a Sinisterhood sticker, membership to our exclusive Patreon Facebook group for those in the Ruling the Airwaves tier, a special shout-out on the show, and a monthly bonus minisode.
You also get weekly content called Mixed Bag, where Christy and I bring 3 of our favorite things, whether it's a book, movie, TV show, or news article, or a delicious snack, and we talk about something that we love and surprise the other person.
It's super fun. We're going to record one right after this.
I got some good stuff for
you. Yeah. And make sure you stick around after our sign-offs to hear your shout-out.
So many of you have been tagging us in pictures of you sporting your sweet Sinisterhood merch. Well, keep those pictures coming. We love them. If you want to get some cool swag of your own, like t-shirts, mugs, totes, and even clothes for your kiddos, visit Sinisterhood.com and click on shop in the top right corner.
The best thing you can do to help us grow is like, review, and subscribe on iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcast. And please tell a friend who you think would like us to check us out. It means so much to us and really helps small podcasts like us get more exposure.
You can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Sinisterhood Pod, and like us on Facebook at Sinisterhood. Christy, where are you at?
I'm on Twitter at Christy or GTFO, and on Instagram at Christy M. Wallace. Heather?
I'm on Instagram at Heather versus the World, and on Twitter at MCK versus the World.
As always, the devil rules the airwaves.
And keep it creepy. Hey everybody, thank you so much for supporting the show on Patreon. Here are your special Patreon shoutouts: Mary Catherine White,
Jennifer Lamelli,
Jess M,
Lena Yuhing,
Lisa Penza,
Becky Karecki,
Alexa Carlson,
Courtney Rasick,
Caitlin Campbell,
Alexandra Mundy,
Talia Arakua,
Chloe Allard,
Alexis Rousseau,
Lindsay Carter,
Louisa Shipstone,
Lorelai A. Hernandez,
Chelsea Alcantara,
Carrie Bayless,
Melanie,
Melissa Okinka,
Maddie Fulton,
Mona Keller,
Allison Dial,
Manessa Caldwell,
Ashley Teeter,
Araceli Rodriguez,
Heather Noel Flau,
Irina Konovalova,
Raisa Nolasco,
Serena Kozlowski,
Dana,
Anna Hoon,
Haley Hankins,
hi Haley, Amber Blackheart,
Tara Crichton,
Jennifer Wicker,
Michelle Gundrum,
Shyler Dilworth,
Allison,
Hannah,
Candy,
Courtney Fried,
Sarah Bolgheier,
Annie Rentos,
Julia H,
Shannon Young,
Anivia Rezavis,
Julia N. Mooney,
Tanya Payne,
Rachel Barrett,
Allison Hausler.
And Bethany Richardson.
Bless you all so much for supporting the show, and bless you all for your forgiveness, for we have tried so hard to pronounce your names, and we love you so much, so, so much.
Yes, you all have beautiful names, and we're sorry if we bastardized them.
Truly apologize, but we are truly, truly, truly grateful.
So much so. Keep it creepy.
Wahahaha.
Sinister.
Are you a fraud-paying American? One in four tax-paying Americans has been a victim of identity fraud. With LifeLock, if your identity is stolen, they fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Last year, billions in refunds were stolen. Could be from your salary, overtime, or second job. Gone. But this year, you don't need to stay a victim. Because this tax season, fraud-paying American is something no American should have to claim. Save up to 40% your first year. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.